Next case for argument, Thornton v. Snyder. Mr. Berger.
May it please the court, my name is Jeff Berger, and I represent the appellant, plaintiff Roger Thornton. In his appeal from a decision in the Central District of Illinois, Mr. Thornton appeals from the district court's determination on summary judgment that he failed to exhaust his administrative remedies, and he also appeals from the district court's order that he be excluded from attending trial in person, instead requiring the entire trial to be conducted by video conference.
Did he ask for damages in this case?
Yes, he did, Your Honor.
That's not. I don't think the briefs ever make that clear at any point. But
I apologize,
I think
it's
an important
Honor.
Point.
Mr. Thornton was placed in cell 106 on January 13th of 2000. As soon as he was able to adjust to the dim light in the cell, he realized that the walls of the cell were covered with human feces.
Okay, well, we know what the facts are.
Can you get to the exhaustion question? Because if Thornton had been transferred out of cell 106 even before he filed a grievance, what would he have had to do to exhaust his administrative remedies?
Under those circumstances, Your Honor, I don't believe he would have had to do anything with the administrative process. He, during the time between when he was put in the cell on January 13th and January 28th, he tried to pursue those informal remedies, which are prescribed by the regulations. He tried to get the attention of the corrections officers. He received no response except for taunting. He sent multiple letters to all three of the defendants at issue on this claim, and again received no response. And then he filed his grievance directly with the warden pursuant to Section 504-840, seeking to have it treated on an emergency basis. Had he been moved out of that cell before that time, he would essentially have had the relief that he otherwise had been seeking through these informal means and later did through the grievance process. So in that case, there would be no relief available to him since he had been moved out of the cell and his administrative remedy.
It seemed to me if these when these conditions were corrected, he might have to exhaust his remedies if he was still seeking damages. That's why I asked the question about damages. If he weren't suggesting pursuing damages, then I'm not sure what his claim in court would be because the condition has been corrected.
Yes, Your Honor. It was corrected under the actual circumstances of the case on February 22nd with regard to cell 106.
So the lawsuit then is just involves damages, right?
Yes, solely with the harm involved while he was confined in cell 106 and then again while he was confined in cell 752 without a mattress for 2.5 months.
Well, if he hadn't labeled this an emergency grievance, isn't there a chance he would have gotten quicker action?
I'm not sure how he necessarily would have.
Well, they may have looked and said, oh, this is not what we think of as an emergency, and so they just discarded.
Well, he labeled it as an emergency grievance. Apparently that was the determination by the warden because Mr. Thornton testified at his deposition that he received a letter, apparently from the secretary of the warden, advising him that the warden had determined it wasn't an emergency.
Right.
And had he filed it through the normal process, it's not clear at all that anything would have gone differently. He, throughout the course, apparently, of his confinement, he apparently is a green card or a blue card. I'm not sure which one it is.
But what I understand the government to be arguing is that because he mislabeled it as an emergency motion when it wasn't, it was, you know, not handled promptly. It was considered an improper motion. If he had made clear, if he had just labeled it as an ordinary motion, maybe they would have processed it. I mean, it seems paradoxical, but maybe they would have processed it more expeditiously because they couldn't have just turned it down as being mislabeled.
Well, Your Honor, the the grievance that he filed wasn't mislabeled, but rather he filed it pursuant to that Section 840, which allows a grievance to be filed directly with the warden if the prisoner wants to request that it be treated on an emergency basis. And that's exactly what Mr. Thornton wished for this grievance to be treated as an emergency. The warden's subsequent determination that he would not handle it on an emergency basis has no bearing on the validity of his actual submission of the grievance under this procedure that's provided in the regulations.
But maybe if you label something an emergency that isn't, it gets put onto a slow track.
Well, that may be true under some circumstances, but under this set of circumstances, it at least seems apparent to me, and I hope to the court as well, that the conditions under which he was confined were certainly certainly egregious. This court has found in a number of cases that similar circumstances for as little as 3 days could potentially be a constitutional violation, and in those cases, the...
But constitutional violation and emergency aren't the same thing, right?
That is true. But in this case, he was confined to the small cell.
And they may have in mind emergency, just threats of violence.
If that was indeed the purpose behind what was to be handled on an emergency basis, it's certainly not clear from the regulations, which simply, as far as the warden is concerned, require that he determine that whether there is or is not a substantial risk to the inmate's health or safety. And at least to me, being in this cell seems as if it would be a threat to his health. I mean, that seems self-evident to me. And Mr. Thornton complained in his grievance about suffering asthma attacks while he was in there, about being nauseous and not being able to eat. He apparently lost weight while he was in the cell. And then in between both cells, with regard to both grievances, he complained of back pain he suffered from sleeping on the steel bunk as a result of his having scoliosis. The defendants essentially, they contend that Mr. Thornton must continue to pursue the administrative grievance process even when there is no remedy available. And in doing so, they rely on language in several cases that simply uses the word all to say that the inmate must exhaust all administrative processes. However, their interpretation of this is at odds with the language of the statute itself, which requires simply that the inmate exhaust such remedies as are available, and also at odds with the guidance provided by the Supreme Court in Booth versus Turner and by this court in the Perez case, in the Lewis case, and in the Dixon case, each of which noted that that the inmate need pursue administrative remedies only those administrative remedies as are actually available. In the Booth case, the Supreme Court noted that the remedial scheme is available only when the administrative process has the authority to take some action that is responsive to the inmate's complaint. And while the Booth case held that the action doesn't need to be the specific remedy that the inmate seeks, it did hold... It did recognize also that the system must be capable of delivering some form of relief, and our contention is that there was no form of relief remaining after he was moved out of cell 106.
That's why we're asking about the damages. Isn't that still something he's seeking here, even after all these conditions are corrected?
Yes, Your Honor, but it's not available in the Illinois grievance process. It's only available.
No, I know, but didn't the Booth case deal with that? That essentially said, even if you're asking for damages, which you're not entitled, the system won't provide you with, you still have to exhaust your remedies.
Yes, but in that case, the inmate had additional remedies available through the administrative process. If my recollection serves, the Booth inmate was dealing with an ongoing malady at the time.
You mean there were still conditions that could be corrected in addition to the damages?
Yes, sir.
But
yes,
there
sir.
Aren't here, you're saying. That's
yes. And I'd like to, seeing as my time is running low, touch on the exclusion aspect. The defendants essentially contend that participation by video is equivalent to...
Now, couldn't he have... Now, that's not a good argument. couldn't Thornton have appealed within the administrative process the warden's determination that it was not an emergency?
Well, he was actually moved out of cell 106 before the time for appeal had expired. It's not clear when he received that notice from the warden. It was at some time between when he filed it on the 28th of January and the 22nd of February. He was already in cell 752, so we know that at some point in there he was moved and at some point he received that letter. That entire period, however, takes only 25 days. So at the most, if that letter had arrived on the same day that he filed his grievance with the warden, and that he had only been moved to 752 on the 22nd, that's still only 25 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I see I'm out of time.
Okay.
Now.
Thank you, Mr. Thank Berger. You. Ms. Welsh?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm here representing Warden Schomig and Captain Shuttleworth. We're asking the Court to affirm both the dismissal for PLRA exhaustion and the jury verdict in this case.
And everything happens so quickly. I don't understand what realistically he could have hoped to have to get through this administrative route.
Well, Your Honor, to go back to the first principles about...
How long did it take from when he was put in the cell to when the mattress was replaced in the second cell?
That was
curing his...
That's not clear from the record, but it was he went into the first cell in mid-January, and the grievance was denied as moot in May. So in May 11th, I believe it was. So that's the length.
You don't know when the mattress in the second cell was replaced?
No, it's not clear. It's not clear from the record exactly. He filed the grievance on February 22nd, so we know that it was there then, and then we know that it was denied because it had been replaced sometime between February 22nd and May 11th.
Well, you're saying that even though the conditions were corrected, he still got to continue with this grievance procedure.
Yes,
right?
Your Honor,
Can he get out of the grievance procedure at that point? The conditions have been requested, and they don't offer damages. So,
right.
What's he doing?
Right.
What's the point of having a grievance procedure?
Right. Well, Your Honor, what the Supreme Court said in Booth is that it doesn't matter if there's a fit between what the inmate wanted
No. That's not responsive to what Judge Cudahy is asking. We're not talking about a fit. What could he have gotten?
For example, Your Honor, what he could have done if he had appealed to the director is say, in the instance of the first cell or the second cell, this took too long. You transferred me from 106 to 752, but then I still had this bad mattress. What are you going to do about that? And what we could have done was said, well, wait. What could have happened if it had gone to the director is that the director could have said, there's obviously a systemic problem here. This guy had this bad mattress for 3 months. Nobody paid attention to him. We need to discipline the people who did it. And that is something that could have happened.
He ought to continue this process just for the benefit of the administration of the prison? That seems odd to me. I don't really understand how you can require him to continue a process which is going to get him nothing.
Well, Your Honor, have
any cases given as an example relief available but wouldn't benefit the
inmate directly?
Inmate?
Well, this is true with every
has any case given such an example?
Yes, Your Honor. For example, the Ricardo case, which we cite in our brief, this court said that the grievance concerned the would have alerted the prison officials to a problem with the guards make selling decisions and would have avoided litigation in the future. And this is exactly the same kind of situation that occurred here.
I would think the prison would say, well, you've gotten all you asked for. Well, why you keep complaining?
Because
it seems to be irrational to me.
Because, Your Honor, what the PLRA says is the purpose of the PLRA is to allow the prison officials to satisfy the inmate. And this is indeed what the grievance rules say. If the inmate is not satisfied with the action, even if it is exactly what he wanted, then the inmate must appeal. And there is the possibility of additional relief, not perhaps what the inmate wanted because he already got that, but he's still dissatisfied, as Your Honor noted.
Sort of providing him with an incentive to be dissatisfied with that approach, it seems to me.
Well, Your Honor, I mean, inmates are rarely going to be satisfied, are rarely satisfied with the resolution of the grievance. Either they don't get what they want, or like plaintiffs, they do get what they want, but they're still dissatisfied because they want more. They want damages. And just because an inmate wants damages doesn't mean that he doesn't have to exhaust the grievance procedure.
Oh, that's what the Booth case
exactly.
is. But apparently that's distinguishable because in Booth he was asking for things he could have received.
Well, but Your Honor, what your question implies is that there has to be a fit between what he asked for and what's available, and that's not so.
Well, there's got to be something he can ask for that he doesn't have. If he's got everything, he doesn't have to ask for more.
No, what there has to be is that the prison officials have to be given the opportunity to satisfy the inmate. Here, obviously,
well, presumably they satisfied him. They did everything he asked them to do.
Well, but he's not satisfied because he sued. So by definition, he is still dissatisfied. And inmates who are dissatisfied because they can't get damages under Booth still have to complete every step of the administrative process that's available. And the administrative...
How does your reading of Ricardo square with what this court said in Perez? It's possible to imagine cases in which the harm is done and no further administrative action could supply any remedy. Suppose the prisoner breaks his leg and claims mm-hmm. delay in setting the bone as cruel and unusual punishment. If the injury is healed by the time suit begins, nothing other than damages could be a remedy. And if the administrative process cannot provide compensation, then there's no administrative remedy to exhaust. Why isn't that exactly like this case?
Your Honor, that the so-called Perez exception, I don't think survives
the
after Booth. Well, that's what it's referred to.
Do you think that was overruled by Booth?
I think that Booth made it clear that the Perez exception was if the inmate wants damages, then there's an exception to the exhaustion argument. But Booth says the contrary. If an inmate wants damages, he still has to exhaust. You have to give the
what
prison...
What about footnote 4, which says without the possibility of some relief, the administrative officers would presumably have no authority to act on the subject of the complaint, leaving the inmate with nothing to exhaust.
Right. As long as there is some relief that can be given,
well,
not necessarily the relief that the individual wants, but as long as there's some
Does
action...
Does Booth discuss the possibility of relief that would not benefit the prisoner in any way?
Porter does. Porter explicitly talks about alerting the prison administration to systemic problems, and that's the sort of action. Again, it's to allow the prison officials. You have to go back again to think what did Congress intend, and what Congress intended was to give the prison officials the opportunity to satisfy the plaintiff, not necessarily with what he wanted, but by doing something. And as long as the administration can do something, and one of the things, for example, that could have been done here, as I suggested, was to discipline the individuals who had the Mr. Thornton in the cell. There are things that can be done. They can, in fact, try to make up to an inmate by giving them, changing their prison location, their cell block, their giving them more commissary privileges. The prison officials have a lot of discretion, and as long as there is some discretion that they can exercise, there is some
Even
remedy
though it
available.
It doesn't benefit him, is that right?
Well, I'm saying it could benefit him because if he, for example,
well, it
said,
might, but I mean that'd just be an accident, wouldn't it?
Well, no. I'm saying it could benefit him in particular because it could be that they would say, well, you know, we realize that this was a bad thing, and we know that you want to be in an institution closer to your family, so we'll transfer you. I mean, there could be a benefit like that. And as long as there's, Booth and Porter are very clear about this, as long as there's something that the...
No, they're not very clear about that at all.
And then one of the arguments you're making is Thornton didn't initiate the grievance process regarding the cell 106 conditions, but why should an inmate who files a grievance as an emergency, which then alerts officials to the problem, be treated as though he never initiated the grievance? Because that's basically, bottom line, how you would like us to treat it.
Right, but under Perez and Ford, in all the cases, in this court says you have to follow precisely what the rules are for the institution. And nothing in the institutional rules allowed plaintiff to treat that complaint as anything but a nullity. If an inmate files a non-emergency grievance, and that really means just as Judge Posner suggested, potential assault or perhaps a serious medical condition, unless it's a true emergency, it doesn't really exist. It doesn't get into the system. It's only screened at the first level for whether it should be an emergency and addressed or non-emergency and go through the regular part of the system. And if inmates start treating everything as emergencies, then the true emergencies would get lost. But again, the inmates must follow, the court's been quite strict about this, inmates must follow every single step as described by the department rules on grievances and must complete those steps as long as some remedy is available.
Even if they haven't got a grievance, so that's the part.
As long as some remedy, if they're dissatisfied, and here the plaintiff, because he wanted money damages, is plainly dissatisfied with getting exactly what he asked for.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Welsh.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Berger, how much time does he have? No time? We'll give you a minute.
Your Honors, Ms. Welsh continually talks about...
You didn't mention the Ricardo case in your reply brief.
No, Your Honor. Ms. Welsh, in her brief, only cited Ricardo for the purpose she cited it in support of an assertion of one of the purposes of the exhaustion requirement. And we have no argument with the fact that in creating the exhaustion requirement, Congress had as a purpose the possibility of addressing systemic problems in the prison system. But she seems to equate purpose with relief. And what may be a purpose of the exhaustion...
I understand. I haven't read Ricardo, I have to admit. She characterizes it. I would think this would provoke a reply from you. Inmate assaulted by another inmate satisfied PLRA, etc. His grievance could have alerted prison officials to systemic problem about selling decisions.
Yes, but that prisoner had not actually exhausted his remedies, administrative remedies, and there was the opinion actually rattled off a number of the purposes behind the exhaustion.
What does the case hold?
I'm sorry?
What does Ricardo hold?
As I recall, Ricardo holds that, as all these other cases do, that the prisoner who has not exhausted all those administrative remedies must continue through the administrative process.
Well, I don't understand. I thought your argument here was that Thornton didn't have to exhaust, that is, he didn't have to appeal the warden's determination because the problem had been corrected.
Well, what we actually contend is not that there's an exception to exhaustion, but rather that the remedies have been exhausted as of the point where there is no longer any relief that can be offered.
Well, what about her argument that this grievance procedure serves this ancillary purpose of alerting the prisons to problems, and therefore, even if there's nothing in it for you, the inmate, you have to keep pushing ahead if you want to bring a lawsuit?
Well, that's not what...
She attributes that to Ricardo.
That is, Ricardo mentioned as one of the purposes behind the exhaustion requirement, but that exhaustion requirement is limited by the statute's own text as well as by all the other holdings that I mentioned in my main argument. It's limited to those remedies that are available. And while there may be additional benefit to the system, had, if an inmate plaintiff continues on through the appeals process, there's simply no possible benefit to him because there's no possible remedy, and that exhaustion requirement doesn't go so far as to require him right. to do the work of the system.
Okay, we get it. Thank you. Thanks very much. And we had asked you to represent Mr. Thornton in this court. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. I think it was actually Judge Baker in the court below.
Well, no, we have to approve these things.
Oh, well, then thank you, Your Honor.
So anyway, thank you very much for your efforts, vigorous efforts on behalf.
Thank you, Your Honor.